Chapter 7. I am not now, nor have I ever been, a waste of life. Sometimes I have to close my eyes and put myself back in the burning lighthouse. It's kind of like scratching at a scab. It itches, and you know that's because it's healing, but you can't stop scratching it. Pretty soon, it begins to bleed, and you've got to start healing all over again. They put these cones around dogs' heads to keep them from scratching wounds. I wish somebody could put some kind of cone around me, because on the day Alex's hand got glued to his head, I couldn't help but scratch. I went down to the beach where Tyson and I had washed ashore that day back in October. There were still plenty of reminders, like the burned timbers half buried in the sand, the smell of charred wood that had mangled with the salty aroma of decaying kelp. The sound of the sea was a constant reminder, too. The rumble of the breakers and the hiss of the spray. Such a comfort to some people, so threatening to me. I walked the beach all that afternoon, looking at the burned driftwood, listening to the uneasy echoes of the world around me in seashells, picking the scab. I was so lost in my own thoughts, I didn't notice that I wasn't alone on the beach, until I practically walked into two kids heading the other way. "Oh, sorry," I said. It took me a moment to register who they were. It was none other than Brett Whateley, and our resident large dude, Moose San Giorgio. After my fight with Brett the other week, he was the last person I wanted to see. As for Moose, well, he was kind of like a human flavor enhancer. He wasn't much by himself, but somehow his linebacker presence doubled the intensity of whomever he was with. In this case, it turned Brett Whateley from a general nuisance into a 4-star general nuisance. "We got a message for you from Alex Smarts," Brett said. Then he tried to deliver a punch to my gut. He must have seen too many action movies, however, because he sort of did it in slow motion. I caught his fist in my open palm and squeezed, cracking all of his knuckles. It sounded like a bag of microwave popcorn. "Ah!" He pulled back his hand, grimacing, and almost fell to his knees. "That's gotta hurt," said Moose. Moose was actually a pretty intelligent guy when he was around intelligent people. But today, he was taking his lead from a guy with a mental capacity of a canned ham. Still, I tried to address Moose's more sensible side. "So, Moose, what's the deal here? Did Alec really send you guys to beat me up?" "He hired us as bodyguards," Moose said happily. "The beating you up part was Brett's idea." Brett grunted, still shaking his aching hand. "What's Alec paying you?" I asked Moose. "He says he'll give us positions in his cabinet when he gets elected class president." "Get cash," I told him. "I'll consider it." Brett, having recovered, glared at me. "We're here to tell you that you better lay off Alec, or we may have to take steps." "Ooh, that's a tough one," I said, and did a quick search through my long-term movie memory. "Ah, I've got it. Michael Bayne said that in The Abyss. Am I right?" "Shut up." By now, my moron meter was in the red, and I couldn't stand much more. "Listen, if you guys want to be Alec's personal secret service, that's fine with me. But until you catch me red-handed trying to mess with him, stay out of my airspace." "Fair enough," said Moose, and stepped aside. I shouldered Brett out of my way, and although he threw a clump of wet sand at my back, I refused to let him provoke me. "It'll only be a matter of time, Mercer," he shouted after me. "The truth is out there!" My father cornered me in the kitchen the next morning, before I left for school. "I want to talk to you about the message I got from your vice principal yesterday. I thought we talked about it last night. Actually, I got out of having to discuss it by asking him to help me with math. I did need the help, and he was so pleased that I had asked him for anything that he forgot about the phone message from Mr. Green, which luckily didn't give a clue as to why he had called. We had a good time, believe it or not, doing algebra together. Then, when the work was done, I guess he didn't have the heart to talk to me about Mr. Green. I did hear him and Mom worry talking, though, later at night when they thought I was asleep. Dad poured himself a bowl of cereal. I plan to call him back as soon as I get into work. Good. He likes it when people are prompt. I burned my fingers as I pulled my waffle from the toaster and grimaced, shaking the pain out of my hand. My mom had already left for work, so they couldn't double-team me, but Dad was doing fine on his own. "Are you in some sort of trouble, Jared? What's going on in school? Have you done something we should know about?" In social studies, we'd been learning about McCarthyism. You know, how back in the 50s some senators, whose shorts got too tight, decided that everybody who picked their nose the wrong way was a communist. They formed a committee, and began to ask people all kinds of questions, like, are you now or have you ever been a communist? Sort of like the questions my dad was asking now. Some people got really good at not answering. Have you done something wrong, Jared? Not that I recall. Is there a reason why Mr. Green would be calling us? Not that I know of. What about your friends? Have they been getting into any trouble? You want me to name names? He stared at me, like he so often did, in that state of parental confusion. It was Tyson who saved me. Mr. Green was probably calling about me, Tyson said as he came into the kitchen. He said he would call to see how I was doing with my new foster family. Tyson took my waffle. So, how am I doing? Dad relaxed. He was much more at ease with Tyson lately than he was with me. Aside from eating us out of house and home, you're doing fine. Then he said his standard goodbye and left. I really don't like lying to my parents, I told Tyson after my father was gone. Hey, what use am I if I don't teach you some bad habits, he said. Anyway, I reminded him, it won't hold up very long. He'll call Green back and I'll get my butt kicked halfway to China. Nah, Tyson said. Your dad's not a butt kicker, and anyway, he's not going to punish you for something you didn't do. I wasn't so sure about that. I knew I had broken my parents' trust before. Would they believe me now, or would the weight of everyone else's suspicion sway them? When the Shadow Club was brought to justice for the first time, they had taken away all my privileges. TV, video games, times with a friend, time anywhere unsupervised. Gradually, they had begun to give those things back, but they still withheld the most important thing of all, their trust. I had always taken it for granted that a parent's trust was a right, not a privilege. As I pondered my own parents' faith in me, there was a knock at the door. I opened the door to see a kid standing there. A kid with a crew cut. It took me a few seconds to realize that it was Alec. Then, it occurred to me that his little run-in with the Lunar Glue would leave him like that. I took a step back, almost expecting him to sock me or something, but that's not what he had in mind. He had a new look on his face. Yes, I could see anger there, but now there was something else too, on top of anger and resentment. It was fear. I want to know what I have to do to get you to stop, he said. Tyson came in from the kitchen, took a few moments to gauge the situation, and slipped out the back door, realizing that this was just between me and Alec. Why don't you come in? I said to him. Why, is there an anvil hanging above the door? I backed up and opened the door wide to show him that there was nothing about to fall on his head. Then he stepped in. I hurried off to the kitchen. Want a waffle? I asked him, fumbling with the package of frozen waffles. Not hungry. The haircut kind of suits you, I said, and then grimaced, realizing how dumb it was to say it. No, it doesn't, he said. My cheeks are too big. I look like a chipmunk with a crew cut. What is it going to take to make you to stop? He said again. This was a white flag of surrender, and as much as his arrogant nature irked me, I was even more bothered to see him defeated. You've got it wrong, Alec, I told him. I'm not the enemy. Then what are you? He said. Because you're definitely not a friend. I put my hands in my pockets. He was right. I wasn't a friend. But that really wasn't my fault. You don't have friends, Alec, I told him. You have subjects and servants. You wish you had a tenth of the respect that I had, but you don't. And that's why you hate me, isn't it? That and Cheryl. Leave Cheryl out of this. Then I leaned against the counter and took a deep breath. He was trying to draw me in, to make me angry, but I wasn't falling for that. Listen, I said. Maybe this was the last prank. Maybe, just maybe, the person who did it has realized it's gone too far, and they feel sorry they did it. Alec stared at me, his eyes cold, unbelieving. And maybe they don't. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't help but face his angry distrust with matching defiance. I guess we'll just have to wait and see, won't we?